Hi everyone, this is Bobby Joe, founder and director at Healing House, located at 4505 St. John Avenue in Kansas City, Missouri. Healing House has been providing addiction recovery housing and support programs to assist women and men, as well as children now, in long-term recovery and substance use disorders. We have been helping out people, over 10,000 folks so far. If you have a problem with any kind of addiction, drugs or alcohol, please call us at 816-920-7181 or go to our website, which is www.healinghousekc.org. Again, if you need some help, we would love to help you in your recovery journey, and the number is 816-920-7181. We also provide peer support, resources, job opportunities, recovery meetings, all fellowships, NA, AA, Al-Anon, Alateen, at our Community Outreach Center located at 4428 St. John Avenue, also in Kansas City, Missouri. If you're in need of housing or food or financial assistance, please call us at 816-768-8350. That is the number to the Community Outreach Center. One more time, 816-768-8350. 8350. I just want to let you know on the podcast, they will be about drug and alcohol addiction, and also some include sexual assault and violence. So listeners with small children, please beware, but we'd love for you to join us and just see the wonderful victories that are being made here at Healing House. Have a blessed day. God loves you, and so do I.
I guess I can start this when I was a kid. I grew up in a family that was divorced. My mother divorced my father when I was 5. I remember it pretty clearly because I was such a daddy's girl. And I think that was very traumatizing to me as a child, and I just really didn't know how to deal with it. I remember being quite rebellious from the moment I started getting older and rebelling against my mother, especially. I was messing around with boys at a very young age. I was smoking weed when I was 11 years old. I was running away from home to be with my boyfriend because I just could not live without him. I remember at one point I had ran away and my mom had called the cops, and they showed up at my boyfriend's parents' house, and I ran and hid in the dryer. And they found me in there. My mom was standing with them when they pulled me out of the dryer, and I have hickeys all over my neck, you know. I was very advanced for such a young girl. I dropped out of school when I was in ninth grade because all my friends were smoking weed, and I wanted to smoke weed all day too. I mean, who wants to go to school while everybody's smoking weed all day? So yeah, we moved to Oregon, Missouri, when I started middle school. So seventh grade was amazing. I was meeting new people. I was pretty popular in school. Everybody wanted to be my friend. Something happened, you know, a girl got jealous about a boy that liked me. And I remember we're still pre-adolescent, you know, pre-bubescent, basically. Eighth grade started, an absolute nightmare for me. I was bullied a lot. I was viciously bullied and harassed and chased around school. Things that I never, ever saw myself getting into. I always saw it happen to other kids, but I never thought it would happen to me. I started skipping school. My parents, they worked so much, they didn't know that I was staying at home all day long and, you know, making sure my brother and sister got off on the school bus. And what happened was when they found out that I had been missing school was when I had gotten to a point where I was suicidal at 11 years old, you know, and I had tried to take a bunch of pills and passed out in the dining room. I remember my stepfather and my mother were absolutely freaking out, having no idea what was going on. That was all very traumatizing to me. I didn't want to go back to school, you know, after that. But we did move. That's when I went to high school, dropped out my ninth grade year because immediately I was drawn to these people that were getting high. I mean, immediately. Because I just didn't want to feel anything. I'd already gone through so much in the up to that point emotionally that I didn't know how to deal with that. You know, I dropped out of school, started smoking weed all the time, was taking a lot of acid. Lucky for me, my mother, who had very little control over my actions, was able to get me into get my GED 2 months after school, after I dropped out of school. So then I thought I didn't have to worry about school ever again. And I left home when I was for good for when I was 16 years old. I got my own apartment. I was working. I was pretty much supporting myself. So, let's see. I dropped out of school. At this point, years go by of a lot of drug use. You know, and as the years go by, the more extreme it started to get, and the more I started to experiment with things that I thought I would never do. When I got pregnant with my daughter, I was 21 years old. I had just graduated Job Corps, actually. 4 years after I dropped out of high school, I went to Job Corps. I had my daughter at 21. I moved to Kansas City for the first time. I'm from St. Joe, so it's a small town. All I've known is just small town people and never really lived in a big city, and got my first apartment. Started doing cocaine pretty heavily at that time. You know, my drug use didn't really, really start going until my daughter was like 2 years old. And we had moved to New Mexico, just up and just left everything. Moved out there to start a new life because I was trying to get away from the meth and everything else. And within weeks, you know, they always say no matter where you go, you always take you with you, right? So everywhere I went throughout my life, if I was looking for it, or if I was, you know, my guard was down, I would bump into somebody that knew where I could get something. So I really started doing cocaine pretty heavily, you know, and I was out there by myself with my kid trying to survive. And here I am starting a whole new freaking coke habit or drug habit. And, you know, that all went very south real quick, and I ended up moving back to Missouri. For a long time, I was pretty responsible, somewhat. You know, I was like a functioning addict in different ways, and I always had my own place, and I always prided myself on taking care of my kid, and I always prided myself on being able to. I remember thinking if you took antidepressants or if you took any kind of medication, you were weak, you know, and I was priding myself on not being weak because I wasn't on any kind of medications, but I was, of course. I was self-medicating, you know. A lot of my thinking back then is just absolutely ridiculous. It really is. Like, I feel like I stayed in a mindset of a 16-year-old all through my 20s, 30s. When Elena was my daughter, when she was 7 years old, I lost my place to live. I hadn't paid rent in quite some months, and everything was starting to catch up with me. And I had started actually shooting pills. I was shooting Dilaudids at the time. And I remember thinking that, you know, I can quit this at any time. I'm just doing this because I like it. And of course, that was not true. I was shooting opiates for 4 years before I lost my place to live, and I had an intervention. It's the first time I ever went to rehab. My family tricks me, tells me I need to pick up my father from the dentist, and I walk in, and there's my whole family sitting there just like the show, you know, with their letters ready to pull me away to go to treatment. And I remember that desperate feeling that I felt like I was so scared. I was scared to death to do this. And I just begged for them to let me go home one more time, you know, because I knew where my stuff was at and I needed to grab that on my way to rehab. And they wouldn't let me go back home. They threatened me with taking my daughter if I didn't do this. And so I left. And for my first treatment center, I lasted 12 days of absolute hell. The withdrawals that I have never been matched. You know, I have withdrawn several times in my life, but this has never been matched with that time in my life. 12 days rolls around and I'm starting to feel normal. And my boyfriend comes to see me and I end up leaving. Shortly after that, I did lose my daughter. I had nowhere for her to go. I brought her from house to house with me, couch to couch. And finally, I just gave up, reached out to her father and asked him for help. And back then I was very, very prideful. And I had a resentment towards her father big time back then. And put him through a lot of hell when it came to Elena. But he came to me and absolutely wanted to help in that moment and was very kind about it. I remember telling Elena and myself, this is just 6 months, babe. You know? And I'll just say right now that 6 months turned into 10 years. And, you know, I won't go too much into that, but, you know, it was just a constant vicious cycle of shame and guilt, you know, the shame and guilt of losing my kid that kept me out there for a really long time. And little did I know at the time that all I had to do was just get clean. And I couldn't do it. I couldn't think of it like that. Or maybe I didn't want to, you know, maybe I just didn't want to. And I didn't want to admit that to myself. That meant I was giving up my daughter, you know, for drugs. And I could not admit that to myself. So fast forward, you know, probably at this time, 6 treatments later, 2010. And I show up at the Healing House for the first time. And I talk about this right now because it was a very big turning point in my life. Now, I took a long time to get to that turning point, but it definitely started when I walked in here. I was very angry when I came in here. I was mad at the situation because all of my consequences and all of my actions have now led me to this place where I have absolutely no say in my life. And I, of course, most women, when they show up in situations like this, their first reaction is, I don't want to live with a bunch of women. I don't get along with women. I don't like women. And that was me for sure. And everybody else I lived with. But within the first 2 weeks of me being here, I used and went up to Mama Judy in the middle of a Tuesday night meeting, women's meeting. And the whole time I'm sitting there completely just paranoid. I used a drug that I don't normally use. Paranoid, thinking everybody knew. Went to Mama Judy, walked up to her, said, I think I need to go. I need to pack my stuff and go. And she's like, why, baby? And I said, because I smoked crack all day. She just looks at me and she's like, how about we just take you detox? And I'm like, okay, that's fine. So you stay in detox for 3 days, baby, and we'll let you come back. We'll save your bed for you. 3 days go by and Mom had told me that I was not welcome anymore because Bobby Joe was very upset with me because I had been lying and I wasn't very pleasant to be around anyways. So why would they let me be, you know, come back? So I got out of detox, came to get my stuff, had it all packed, had a place to stay, only because I manipulated some man to let me stay at his house and pulling out of the driveway. And when I was in detox, I wrote a letter to Bobby Joe and Judy, and I was telling them, I'm sorry you didn't get to really see who I am. I apologize for being, you know, disrespectful like this, and I hope you have a nice life. And I guess they read that letter while I was getting all my stuff and driving out of the park driveway, and And I got a phone call that I could come back. So when I came back, that was the first time that I had really felt like that God was trying to intervene in my life. I've never really had a relationship with God, but from the moment I showed up here, that's all I heard. That's all I knew that was that Bobby Joe and Judy believed in. I really didn't give it a second thought. I just needed a place to stay. But when that happened, I felt something. You know, I was pretty selfish and self-centered most of my life. And for me to feel that something else, something bigger than me was working in my life was a big deal. And, you know, that time, I was here for a good time after that. I was here for 6 months, which was a lifetime to me. I was here for 6 months, and I built some amazing friendships in that time and spent the first time in my life clean, doing things I'd never done clean before. So then again, you know, that was starting to create things in me I'd never felt before, and planting seeds that I didn't know were being planted. And, you know, I believe I got kicked out right after that. That's a one of eight times I got kicked out. I got kicked out, and, you know, every time I would get kicked out, it got worse and worse. But every time I was out there, I was always thinking of this place and how I was going to be able to get back. I remember getting high just, you know, in this neighborhood and talking about the Healing House with the people that I'm getting high with. And they're like, well, Brenda, if you love the Healing House so much, why don't you just freaking go back? We don't want to hear it. I'm like, I can't go back. I got kicked out. So 2015 is a big year for me. Big, very monumental, life-changing year, because I almost literally lost my mind. I was sane enough to know that I was going insane. I was going into this dark, dark psychosis, I guess you could call it. I was one of those people on the street that was talking to themselves. I was living in an ex-boyfriend's mother's house, who really didn't know I was there most of the time, because I was downstairs in their dirt basement, you know, just hiding out, living like an animal, not eating. The only thing I had to have was my drugs. And the more drugs I did, the crazier I got. So in that darkness, you know, it didn't happen in one day, but it happened throughout a period of a couple weeks. I felt like this littlest spark of hope, you know, like I started to feel God talking to me, which whether it was, you know, whether it was my psychosis or not, I still don't know, but it did drag me out of there, out of that darkness, you know, out of that dirt basement. I kind of like, if I ever saw that dirt basement again, I don't know what I would do. But that's kind of what I look at it. Like, it's a metaphor almost. But I literally was in there, in that darkness. And I had just gotten picked up for the first time in some pretty serious legal trouble. You know, I was 30. I think I was 36. And for the first time, I finally was getting these felonies on my record, but I was running from everything. So I finally got picked up. I had been on the run for a year. I went to jail for like a month and a half. It was absolutely horrible. I get on probation. I'm on probation until 2015 for, I think, the first 3 months, and they don't really pay much attention to me at all. And so I was, you know, still using, showing up there just crazy out of my mind, and they really just didn't pay that much attention to me. Within 3 months, though, they finally dropped on me, just a surprise drop, and come to find out, you know, I was dirty for just about everything that came up on that UA test, and they gave me the option to get myself into an inpatient, or I could do my backup, which was 7 years. The backup is like, if you don't do this probation time and the things that are required of you, then you will turn around and do 7 years prison time. Or half of that, at least. Which I've been in and out of jail since I was 18 years old, probably a total of 50 times, not exaggerating. And I'd never been to prison, and that did scare me. So, anyways, I'm in this dark, horrible place, and I want help, but I don't know how to really do it, even though I did, but I couldn't make myself do it. So I felt like this probation officer who really didn't give two shits about me. Not really. You know, God was now intervening, working through him to save me. This is how I started to look at it. So God is now working through my probation officer and telling me, get yourself into treatment before you die. Because I was ready to die, and I was thinking seriously of how I was going to do it now this time, you know? So I'm calling all around the place, all around the city, trying to find a treatment center to get into. And I had been in quite a few at this point. I knew a lot of people in treatment centers. I had their phone numbers. I'm calling everybody I can pull strings with, and everybody is telling me there's a 2-week, 3-week wait. And I'm thinking, I am not going to survive that long. I'm not. I'm going to die. And I had nowhere to stay. So I was sleeping on the floor of a friend's house at the time. That was not a friend at all and put me in very dangerous situations. And I'm just holding on, you know. And 2 days go by, though. 2 days go by of me hearing, you know, you're on the wait list. It'll be 2 or 3 weeks. We'll call you. 2 days go by. I'm on the bus. Downtown, just riding the bus for no reason because I got nowhere to go, nowhere to be. And it was comprehensive, telling me they had a bed date for me and that they needed me to come down right now. And I've never been so happy to receive a phone call in my life. You know, I literally got up from the bus. The bus was at a stop. I wasn't paying attention to what stop we were at. It was raining at the time. The sun pops out through these clouds when I get off the bus, and I had to sit down when they told me that they had a bed for me. It was that big to me at the time, you know, because I just really felt like my life was being saved at that moment. And, you know, I remember showing up there and never being so grateful for a damn bed in my life. You know, I was about to hit 40 years old and hadn't slept in my own bed in like 10 years. And I think people just got to go through stuff, man. They just got to go through pain before they get to a place where they're grateful for, you know, gratitude comes from someplace really deep. And I just wasn't capable of that deepness back then, you know? So I didn't mention before, but one of my biggest character defects with my addiction is I was a liar. I was like what they call a pathological liar. I lied so much, just everyday stuff. And even in recovery, when I lived here, I was a huge liar. Like I'd never really lived a life without lying, you know, because you get to a point in life where you realize that you really are a liar, you know, and that's kind of embarrassing, you know, and it's pretty freaking humbling when you really look at it. Like, where does that come from and why do you feel the need to do that? You know, a lot of it comes, I feel like a lot of it came from childhood stuff, you know, wanting to fit in, being in the mind frame of a 16-year-old most of my life, and it just never went away, and I just kept feeding it, you know. When I was in my addiction is when I really started to see it towards the end, you know, in 2015, when I was going through this, you know, this insanity in my brain, which was the scariest thing I'd ever been through in my life. When you hit bottoms, you think you're at a bottom. You don't really know how far that bottom can get. Like, insanity to me is the scariest. Because I knew I wasn't really insane, you know? Like, I'm kind of intelligent most times, and I know common sense, and I can think for myself. But when you get to a point of insanity, all that leaves. And I don't think that anything would have made me stop using until I got there. Because, you know, and the funny thing is that, so after I get out of treatment, right, I didn't know the things that I was retaining when I lived here. I lived here on and off. I had never experienced love like I did here, or a type of bond that I had with the women that ran this place. And I decided I wasn't going to go back to the healing house when I got out of treatment, because I was afraid of, I had disappointed these people so many freaking times. And I was told I could come back, but I told Bobby Joe that I'm going to try it. I'm going to try it without. I have a plan right now. This couple that are in the NA, that have been going to these NA meetings, you know, they told me I could stay at their house until I got a job and got on my feet. So I'm going to try that. And I went to meetings every single day. Went to meetings sometimes 2-3 times a day. I started working. And then that was a stepping stone for me. And then these other stepping stones were created, you know. As long as I stayed clean, these good, amazing things started happening in my life. You know, I had all these legal problems that always overwhelmed me every time I got into treatment and ran from. And all of a sudden, the more I stayed clean, these things started to work out in really weird ways. You know, so I was like, okay, well, this is a lot better than what I was doing before. I'm just going to keep trying to do this. And the things that they had taught me here about integrity and how to live life, you know, I started to apply to my own life while I was out there by myself. I wasn't really by myself, but I had people because I was going to meetings. As long as I stayed clean, I had people. And life started to get really good. Like, I met my husband when I was almost 7 months clean. I had tried this thing where I wasn't going to talk to any guys at this point in my life. I was done with men. I am not going to get into a relationship. I need to learn how to love myself. And I'm just over it. I don't want any of that drama, any stress. I don't want anything for this journey in my life I'm about to go on. So even when I met Luke, I was still in that point in my life where I don't want nothing to do with you. Leave me alone. I don't text guys. I don't talk to guys. I don't want to do any of that. And he was, I don't know if that he liked that even more, because that made him pursue me at this point, where he was leaving flowers on my porch and stuff like that. Well, I started to watch him we were friends first. I started watching from a distance to see how he carried himself, you know, and I'd known him for some years. And you know, Luke was the type of guy that he's really good people. He's just been in some really bad relationships himself, you know. So I took that really slow. I took it really slow until one day, you know, this is part of my story, but I hate telling it because it sounds like I did the exact opposite of what we're supposed to do in recovery. So 6 months go down, you know, then I'm clean. At 7 months, I am in this apartment with a girlfriend of mine, you know, for the first time in over 10 years. And I find out she's using. And it scares me. Like, bad. Like, so bad that I didn't even talk to her about it. I just got my shit and left. That's how bad it scared me. And Luke was actually there to help me move. And I was going to move in with the girlfriend down here in Northeast. Right next to the healing house. But because of all that traumatic stuff I just went through before I went to treatment, I didn't want to be in this area, and it was giving me anxiety real bad on our way here. And I was just really scared. And so he said, you know, Brenda, I just got this place. You can come stay with me. no strings attached. Just help me pay the bills and rent. You can stay here until you find a place to be of your own. And I kept saying, no, 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 I don't want to start this like this, because usually all my boyfriends start with moving in together the first weekend you met, you know. And so I ended up moving in with him. Within 30 days, we're in love. So we ended up building a life together. You know, we ended up building a life together pretty quickly because he has a son. His son is named Damon. Damon is like a child to me, like my own child. Met him when he was 3. His mother is in her addiction and has been for a long time and was putting him in dangerous situations. So we both had to go to court to get custody of his son. It was a long, drawn-out deal. We did get full custody of him, and that's where we had to start building a life. Honestly, we had to. Get married. I'm a stepmom now to a small child. When I have a child that's an adult, you know, God was now putting me in a situation that was complete opposite of what I just came through with my own kid. And I was now the person that was taking care of somebody else's child, you know? And I recognized it from the get-go, but was I ready to accept it was another thing, right? Damon came to us with some pretty bad behavioral problems. I don't really like kids. Okay, especially ones that don't act right. And for the next year, I'm the one who lay down the law. Luke had, he didn't feel comfortable with the way he was doing it. Like, he wasn't sure if it was right. And I wasn't always sure either, you know, but anyways, it was a long year and it made me question myself. And it made me question what I was doing, and it made me question my decisions. Being a stepmom and being in where I'm at in my life right now, because this is not what I thought it was going to be, you know? I was working at Comprehensive at the time. A year after I left there, they asked me to work for them. I worked for them for 2 years. And it was nothing like what I thought it was going to be. I remember thinking, man, this is an absolute miracle that I came from what I came from. And now these people want me to work for them and I get to help people. It wasn't that at all. It turned into me working overnights all the time. And I barely got to see the girls. And I was alone a lot. And I was alone at home a lot. Like, I was alone during the day because everybody's gone. And I'm alone all night because everybody's... And I also suffered from a lot of migraine headaches for like 3 years. Almost the whole time I was clean those 3 years, you know. It affected my quality of life. I mean, I stayed clean. And so these great things were happening for me. But I was still miserable. And I was depressed. A lot of factors, you know? So I decided, I was really miserable in my job. I didn't want to work there anymore. I tried to quit 6 times. They wouldn't let me quit. Like, I kind of was a pushover then too, you know? And so I took a pill one day because my head was so bad. Nothing was helping and I was miserable. I just said, screw it. I took a pain pill. Within 3 days, I was shooting heroin. And, you know, I talked about all that stuff that happened, and I never, ever thought I would ever use again. I never thought it. I mean, all the times before, I knew I was going to use again. I knew eventually I was going to use again. But this time, I did not think. But that just goes to show you, you know, no matter where you think you are, all things fade in your mind. all things. So you have to constantly work at it every single day. So I relapsed. I hide it for, this is in 2018. I relapsed. Hide it from my husband, who's also in recovery. He knew something was up, but he wasn't sure. And he works a lot too, so it was easy, you know. I finally admitted to him that I was shooting heroin, but I had no plans to stop. So, yeah. So the next day, my husband had reached out to some of the women that in my fellowship. You know, I have some pretty amazing women in my fellowship. One of them shows up at my house the next day. And she's like, "You're going to treatment. I want you on the phone right now. I need you to get on the phone and get the treatment." Well, here for the first time in my life, this is now the 10th time I'm going into treatment when I thought I was never going to go again. I get on the phone. I have insurance for the first time in my life. And I'm able to get right into a treatment center. I get into Valley Hope. I'll tell you why. I was a hot mess for that 21 days. I was an emotional, stressed out mess. They got me on medication. And now it's been almost 3 years, you know, since then. Life is a lot different than the first 3 years. Showed me that I am blessed to be in the position that I'm in to help this little boy that needs me more than anybody right now. And, you know, I think that needed to happen for me to come to that point, because before that I was like, I'm walking away. I am walking away from this. This is not what I wanted. But now I know I just love the shit out of him. But I do. I love him like my own child, and he loves me deeply. I know he does. We don't always get along. You know, he's like my own child. We fight. I yell at him. Yep. So my husband is an amazing person. That would have been devastating to him if I had walked away. You know, he doesn't deserve that. And now we continue to still build a life. And when I relapsed 3 years ago, I let that job go, of course. You know, I've been working at this garden nursery for, like, on and off for the last 8 years. They have seen every single version of Brenda that there is. And these last couple of years, they've gotten, you know, the best version that I have produced so far. And they're like, they have been very proud of me and very supportive. They have given me a ton of raises and a ton of bonuses and promotions. And, you know, during the winter time, I'm off most winters. So last winter in January, Bobby Joe called me up and said, "Hey, I'm going through something right now in the RCC and I need your help. Can you come down and help me?" And I'm like, "Sure, okay. I don't know what I'll be doing, but okay, I will come and do whatever I can do for you. I mean, it's the least I can do for you, you know?" I'll tell you what, I end up falling in love with the job. I end up falling in love with this place. Sometimes I don't always feel God in my life because I'm not always thinking about it. And I'm not looking at the things that are absolute miracle, everyday miracles, as with such wide open eyes as you would think, you know. But since I've been here, like every day I feel very fulfilled, whether it's like, whether I did something for somebody or not. Like I just feel like this is where I'm supposed to be today. So I just loved it so much that I went back to this job and told them, "I love you guys. You're my family. This job is amazing, but I have to leave. I feel like God is telling me to do this." And my boss was like, no. God is telling you to do this. He wasn't that understanding, but he begged me to help him through the spring. I helped him through the spring and then make a decision of whether I was going to leave or not. And I knew the whole time I was coming back here, you know, and I wasn't for sure if this position was going to be still available. And I'm talking about this right now because it's a really big deal to me still that I come from where I came from and the person that I was. Especially here, you know, and now I get to help other people that are here that are the same way I was. Like, back then I thought I was so alone because nobody else was messed up as I was, you know, or lied like I did, you know, but I am not alone. I now have the wisdom today to see it in somebody else and maybe help them and let them know, hey, you are not the only one. I used to be just like you, you know? I dropped that whole lying thing, but I wanted to put in there real quick that getting honest with myself and getting honest in the words that came out of my mouth literally saved my life. That was killing me as much as the drugs was. Like, maybe not physically, but I do have a conscience. You know, and I do know the difference between right and wrong. And I grew up knowing the difference between right and wrong. But somehow along the way, I stopped caring about that, you know, and it was eating me up literally inside throughout the years. And I am so honest today that it is sometimes too much for people. Not for me, but and it feels really good to know that people know you as an honest person, you know, because I used to be known as a liar. And that was really embarrassing. And now it's not about being embarrassed for me anymore. It's just knowing that I can lay down at night, you know, and go to sleep with a clear conscience that I'm not screwing up somebody's life today. Or a danger to myself or a danger to somebody else because of my words or actions. But basically where I'm at right now, August 22nd will be 3 years again. So these last 3 years have been day and night compared to the 3 years before that I described. So medication is your friend. You're not weak if you take medication. You know, that was just my messed up thinking back then. It has changed my quality of life. You know, the migraines I used to get, I don't even get the migraines anymore. Like, I don't know where that came from. Maybe stress. Yeah. Maybe being unhappy and things when I thought I should be happy. Or, you know, maybe the timing was just so crazy back then. And it was, new experiences and, you know, didn't know which way was the right way to go. And I looked at everything very, very deep back then. And things are deep, you know, but I would pick it apart and overthink, you know. Now I'm a lot more laid back than I was. There's no certain way that recovery looks. Your recovery is your recovery and nobody gets to tell you what that looks like. So that's what I believe in now. I used to believe in that cookie cutter image of what, especially NA recovery looks like, and that I had to be perfect at it. And I don't have to be perfect at it. And the less perfect I am, I think the more that helps people and myself. With that, I pass.